Rodney Page. That's not a borrowed violin by any chance, is it, Rod? No, okay. We wanted everything to be in keeping with the theme of today's thing as much as possible. So we're glad you're here, Rodney. Really nice. This is Pop-Up Stories, our second Pop-Up Stories event from Current State at WKAR Radio, and with a big assist from the Residential College in the Arts and Humanities here at Michigan State. On campus anymore, but at Michigan State University, and Katie Wittenauer and Dean Steve Esquith have been instrumental in the organization of this here event. I'm Mark Bayshore. I'm the host of Current State on WKAR 5 days a week, a couple times a day. We've got a great lineup of storytellers, I think, for today, and they're all going to be riffing on the theme loan and borrow, which is, of course, tied with the venue here, the East Lansing Public Library. We've got room for a couple of extra storytellers this afternoon, so if you want to throw your name in the hat, you just kind of want to see how people do and how good they are, how bad they are, you know, you might want to evaluate that. We totally get it. Katie Wittenauer from ARCA is over here. So get with Katie if you'd like to share your story. We'd love to hear it. We want to remind everybody that the stories should be true. So not a folk tale that your grandma used to tell you, or an Aesop fable, or, you know, some variation of that thing. It should also be first person. So it's not a story that happened to your cousin's best friend's dog walker or anything like that. Please try to keep your stories to around 5 minutes. Rodney will be giving you some cues to help you with the time. And, you know, you get into storytelling and it's easy to lose track of time. But so in keeping with the five-minute time limit, what are they going to hear at 4 minutes, Rodney? Four-minute cue. Really nice, really tasteful. Now it gets a little meaner. What'll I hear at 5 minutes, Rodney? And at 6 minutes, it's straight out of the Birds. You know, it's no. Well done. And if any of you have just a very short version of a story that you'd like to share, we have room for what we call our tiny tales. It's a little tale that you can write in a sentence or two and put on a post-it note over there on the stand. So feel free to indulge in that, if you will. Right now, let's get our event started here. Kathleen Veith is our first storyteller. Welcome, Kathleen.
So my story begins with a borrowed car. It was 1970 March. I was in college, in love, and about to get in trouble. It was right after spring break, and I hadn't gone anywhere except to work, because that's what I was, a responsible worker. But when I got back to campus, surrounded by all these bronzed beauties, telling tales of their sun and their surf and their sand, something inside me positively snapped. And luckily, I wasn't alone. There were four of us in my dorm room at the time. And we were all sitting whining about the sleet and the slush and the snow and the rain that is wet March Chicago, when we decided kind of collectively that we were going to screw being responsible and we were going to search for the sun. So I called my boyfriend. Can I borrow your car? Sure. Now, this car was a 1960 black VW Bug, about 180,000 miles, a bit of a beater, but it ran. By the time he found out where we were taking it, it was too late to stop us. I couldn't have told him ahead of time. He would have convinced me that it would never have made it. One of the girls, Colleen, assured me she knew how to drive a stick shift. So about 6 hours into the trip, about Cairo, Illinois, I said, okay, Colleen, take over. Unfortunately, she never made it out of the gas station parking lot. Turns out she had watched her brother drive a stick and thought, how hard could it be? So I was back in the driver's seat, driving straight through to the sunshine. Well, about Georgia, I was struggling and so was the car. It was sputtering, it was smoking. So I pull into a gas station and say to the guy, will you please add some water to my radiator? He looked at me then, hard, walked around to the back of the car, came up to the driver's window and said, girlie, you mean to tell me you came all the way from Illinois? You don't know this car doesn't have a radiator? I smiled sheepishly and kind of mumbled, it's not my car, I borrowed it. So 32 hours after leaving campus, we arrive in Daytona Beach, Florida, and we were euphoric. The sun, the sand, the surf. Unfortunately, 8 hours after that, we were holed up in our hotel room, the AC blasting, our skin scorched, fried, burned. Every one of us was bad, but no one was as bad as Kay Richards. Her skin was positively purple. She was moaning miserably. Now, by that time, my euphoria had turned into exhaustion. And even though I should have been a liberated woman, it was 1970. Instead, I call my boyfriend, sobbing.
You've got to come and get me. I can't possibly drive that car all the way back alone. Come and save me.
That call was followed by three others. They called their bosses, their boyfriends, their brothers, begging for money to fly them home in a hurry. Meanwhile, Jack, back on campus, was scurrying around borrowing money from anyone and everyone. A dollar here, a dollar there, a fiver. Two people actually gave him $10 bills. Didn't take him long at all to amass the amount he needed to fly to save his damsel in distress, me. Now, we were 19 years old and in love as only 19-year-olds can be, so we were thrilled with the idea of spending 32 hours in a car alone. So thrilled that on a whim, instead of heading north to home, we decided to take a turn. We turned west because, after all, we had never been to New Orleans. So we arrived there broke, tired. So we go to the Holiday Inn, and we say to them, we're going to be here two nights. Instead, kids, close your ears, we left after one night, 4 a.m., very stealthily. All the way for the next 100 miles, we expected blue lights to be flashing in our rearview mirror. Nothing happened. We blissfully drove home until we faced the music, and it was a dirge. This was a very small, very Catholic, and very conservative college. We had to face our parents, our teachers, our dorm directors, our bosses, even the dean of students brought us into his office to lambast us. Now, that trip was 45 years ago. We have made many trips to Florida. We've even gone to New Orleans a few times, but we have never had a trip so sweet as that one in a borrowed car, with borrowed money on borrowed time.
Well done. Thank you, Kathleen. Once again, this is Pop-Up Stories from Current States from WKAR and the Residential College of the Arts and Humanities at Michigan State University. I'm Mark Bayshore. Feel free to share a tiny tale on a post-it note over there, or get with April Van Buren over here, or me, or Katie Wittenauer. One of our tiny tales. I never should have borrowed two wooden folding chairs from friends. They got ruined in the rain, and it took me 6 months to save up the money to have them repaired. Guilty horror. Well done. So you get the idea of the tiny tales. Our next storyteller, let's welcome Rena Natla. Rena? Is this going to work? No.
My biggest adventure was in May of 2013 when I swallowed a Monopoly piece. One evening, I was playing the Monopoly game with my sister, and then accidentally, I swallowed it. My mom was scared and took me to the emergency room. The doctors took a lot of x-rays and told me that I had to have surgery. They tried to take it out, but they couldn't. They pushed it into my stomach. I learned a good lesson from not to put anything in my mouth except food.
I should have asked the next storyteller up before I readjusted the mic, right? Right? Not thinking ahead here. Rena Natla, thank you very much. Our next storyteller is Janet Robson. Rodney tells stories with music. There we go.
I had two sons, ages 2 and 4, when my husband and I had a set of twins. So all of a sudden, we had 4 children under the age of 5. chaos reigned most of the time, but as the kids got bigger and we got into a routine, I would say we were doing pretty well. The one thing I could never seem to get a handle on, though, was our dinner hour. Everybody was hungry, everybody was tired, and everybody was crabby. And I like to cook, I like to have a nice meal for us all to sit down together. I had this idyllic picture of all of us sitting together, reporting on the lovely things that had happened to us that day and the interesting projects we were working on at school and home. It just wasn't happening. Someone was sobbing. "You know I hate stuffed peppers. Why do we have them every single night?" And somebody would pitch in with, "I know who got in trouble on the playground today. I did not. I did not." And then to deflect the conversation, he said, "Could we go to the mall tonight?" "The mall? You? You hate to go to the mall." He said, "Well, we have to buy a new coat. I lost mine today," which probably had something to do with the non-existent playground incident. But at that point, I was mopping up spilled milk, negotiating with the stuffed pepper hater about how many bites constituted eligibility for dessert. And throwing daggers with my eyes at my husband, who seemed totally oblivious to everything that was going on. Then my daughter pipes up and says, "My teacher said I should read to my parents for 15 minutes tonight. Can we just do it while we're eating dinner?" And I looked, and my son was wiping his face with the tablecloth. And I said, "What are you doing?" And he gave me the very logical explanation, "Well, I don't have long sleeves on today." So I thought, something's got to give here. This just can't go on. So I decided that if I recorded our dinner table conversation and played it back for them, they would be so chagrined and so mortified that everything would turn around and we'd be having these idyllic dinners that I had pictured in my mind. So I did that. I had one of those big, remember those big tape recorder things, bigger than a telephone book, if you can even remember what a telephone book looked like. But I had a good place to put it where I could hit record and just slip into my place and no one would know they were recorded. So that night I did that. And I have to admit, I was a bit disappointed. Things were going okay, you know, it was kind of a bland night. Nothing terrible was happening, and I was disappointed. So I thought, we'll try it again the next night. So we did that. Same thing, hit record, slip in my seat, and everybody was being really pleasant. And I thought, what is going on here? I know I am the only one who knows this is being recorded. And then I thought, that's right. I am the only one who knows. And because I know I'm being recorded, I'm being very pleasant. And because I'm being pleasant, so is everyone else. Well, tough lesson, but one that thankfully I have been for decades able to take into places like the classroom, contentious meetings, face-to-face conversations with people with whom I didn't agree. And I realized that if I have joy and respect and peace of mind to share, it will be returned to me many times.
Thanks very much, Janet. I never should have borrowed 40-plus books from the library while writing my thesis. My overdue bill was almost $200. A reminder that Rodney Page is our featured musician and violinist here today. I also want to remind everybody that this is the second of three Pop-Up Stories events from Current State and ARCA at MSU. Please, we invite you to join us again Wednesday, October 21st at the Reach Studio Art Center in Rio Town. Create and destroy. is the theme for that. 5:30 p.m. Wednesday the 21st. If you've got a story to tell, we'd love to hear from you, so feel free to join us. But for today, the theme is loan and borrow, and our next storyteller is Kathleen Livingston. Kathleen.
This is a story about some borrowed books. Her mother taught me to quilt. She lent me stacks of books, the pages dog-eared and dusty with observations scrawled in the margins, and it soothed me to see books loved like that. Her first was a log cabin quilt, sturdy and foundation pieced. It lay atop her bed as a child, traveling with her to college, the smell still like home. We both come from women who make art. She is wild in her art, reckless with color, fast. I place each word precisely and take my time. We agree that art should be useful. In her childhood home, I chose my first pattern, a patchwork destined to be imperfect. I sewed self-consciously back then, too aware of my hands tugging hard against the fabric, guiding it around each curve, sure that her mother knew. Her future husband is a lovely man, a sensible man, a man whose small children love, cozy and engaging. He has brown eyes, symmetrical sideburns, and musician's hands. He is the well-worn armchair tested by time and sturdy enough to trust. He is the quilt draped artfully over one arm. He is the path back home. He may have musician's hands, but I have a wicked tongue. I sharpen my eyes, imagining she'll want to meet him, clad in white, head down that long, straight aisle. I do, she says, after the engagement, after the long, straight aisle bordered by thick, deciduous trees in the fullness of summer. I do want that. I vow to be there, to be the ones marked queer, to sit in a makeshift pew or a row of chairs outdoors, depending on one's view of the world, to witness your partnership, bound and legally binding, long as we both shall live, that kind of thing. The charm she made me for her wedding day twists wire around crystal to marry function and meaning. I wore it dangling between my breasts from a ball chain all year, trying to figure out how to write to her with more love than anger. Quilting is the art of piecing remnants into good use, stitching fragments of fabric into kaleidoscopic color or a stark lack. Women's art. Who else could make a story out of scraps? You are wild in your art, reckless with color, fast. I like to make a story patch by patch. Who cares if the pieces jut out haphazardly at reckless angles? I just relish the pleasure of a well-loved fabric passing through my hands.
Very, very nice. Thanks for being with us today. That was great, Kathleen. I never should have loaned. It's funny, I have a feeling most of these begin, I never should have borrowed. I never should have loaned. I never should have loaned my sister. I never should have loaned my sister my grandmother's locket. She traded it for someone else's necklace. Okay. You all heard Rodney Page. Most of you heard Rodney Page here before we got our event started. We want to thank Rodney again here. We've got enough time here. Why don't you play another song for us? What was the song that we heard you walk in performing? What was that?
That was actually an original composition.
No kidding. Okay. Wow.
Delving into writing some of my own music, at least attempting to.
Wow. That was really nice.
Thank you.
Well done. Well, let's hear more from Rodney Page. And I suppose the microphone might help a little bit here if you want.
Sorry. Okay.
Thank you. that an original too? No, that's not. Rodney Page is our musical entertainer here today, and you can learn more about, you're a clinician as well. What's involved in that exactly? What do you do?
I do a lot of outreach with schools. I'm a former teacher in the East Lansing Public School District, and I go to schools and either work with orchestras, and for those school districts that don't have music programs, I go and perform and talk about the violin and talk about different ways that they can use string instruments with a variety of styles of music.
You're busier recently here, I imagine, with cutbacks in arts education, music education?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, understood. Well, Rodney's webpage is full-engagement-experience.com, right? full-engagement-experience.com. You can keep up and keep in touch with pop-up stories by liking us on Facebook or sharing your own tiny tales on Twitter using the hashtag pop-up stories. And keep in mind, if you've got a one-sentence tale that you'd like to share with us instead of getting up here in the microphone, we encourage you to get up here in the microphone. We've still got room for more storytellers. Let April Van Buren know about it, but if you'd rather be anonymous and just share your tiny tale on a post-it note, over there is the place to do that. Our next storyteller is Nikki Rudolph. Nikki, thanks for being here today.
So there was this piece of turquoise shag carpet remnant that had many lives. My grandfather used it for padding on a canoe rack and lining a little trailer, and he even used a piece of it as his bike cushion, his seat cushion. And so we all joked about it because it's still alive and kicking, and it comes in various forms and things like that. But my grandfather was a child of the Depression and reused everything, washed his aluminum foil, reused his Ziplocs, and we all have multiple stories about my grandfather. I could tell you about how he was always the first one off the rope swing into the lake at their place, and he would say that it was for the safety of the grandchildren, but we all knew better. And I could tell you that at 81, he decided to try skydiving for the first time. And I could tell you that at 85, he joined Facebook because he heard all of his grandkids were on it. And I could tell you how even today, at almost 95, he still bikes everywhere around his retirement community, and we all can't keep up with him. And I have plenty of stories about my grandfather, but actually, I'm borrowing one of his stories today, and I think I'm actually breaking the rules, but I'm going for it. So this is actually a story of my grandfather's, because about 10 years ago, he wrote his life story down for all of us grandkids. So here I am in my early 30s opening up all of these stories that some I knew of. I knew that he grew up on a farm in Butler, Pennsylvania. I knew that he learned how to drive a Model T from his older brother when he was about 13. I knew that he went to Grove City College, and that's where he met my grandmother, and they shared 63 years of marriage. And I knew he went and followed his calling and went to Princeton Seminary. And at the time, I didn't think anything of it. I just knew it was Princeton, and he became a minister. But he wrote down a story that some of us had never heard, and it had to do with his job that he had while he was in seminary. My grandfather worked his entire life, and so it was no surprise that he had a job. And of course, he didn't pick the cushy job, like, you know, something nice and simple like checking IDs or something in the cafeteria. He shoveled coal for the furnaces in the dining houses at Princeton. And this was his job. So I get this beautiful image of a man I have known in his Sunday best for most of his life, covered in soot. But he shoveled coal, and the supervisor of all of the students was a good blue-collar Italian-American named Tony. And Tony also ran a side business where he did lawns and landscaping and things like that as the side. And one weekend, he came up to my grandfather and he said, "Paul, I'm a little short-staffed this weekend. Could you help me out? I have this address that I'm working at. Can you meet me here on Saturday and help me out with this?" My grandfather said, "Sure," because he was always looking to kind of make a little extra money to pay for school. Showed up at the address on Saturday. Tony's out back doing the weeding. My grandfather's in the front yard.
doing what I assume was some kind of mowing or lawn maintenance, and the owner of the house walked up with a colleague. And the owner of the house was Professor Albert Einstein. And all of us grandkids were like, what? Hold on, wait a second. I'm in my 30s and I'm just now learning that my grandfather mowed Einstein's lawn. And that part was fun enough because of all of the stories that he shared, he could tell you everything about locomotives. He could tell you anything about the man he met on a train on the way to some odd trip. He can tell you all kinds of stories. But this one got a paragraph in his entire life story. And it was just so perfectly my Daddy Paul. So the part that I love the most of the whole story, and so I share this with you, is not that he mowed Einstein's lawn, but at the end of this paragraph, my grandfather made this very simple observation. As Dr. Einstein was walking up to his house with his colleague talking about heaven only knows what, my grandfather noted, Albert Einstein wasn't wearing any socks. Thank you.
Thank you, Nikki Rudolph. I never should have loaned a first edition Catcher in the Rye to a high school friend. I still regret that. There's lots of those in circulation, though. Charles Upshaw is the next name on my list. Charles?
History tells us that Napoleon's army was within a stone's throw of Moscow when it was stopped by the Russian winter. Looking back on it now, I think I was about 20 minutes from finding myself in a similar situation. Now, I apologize because I have this bad habit of starting in the middle of stories. So maybe I should go back to the beginning. In 1971, I had the opportunity to go on a tour to the Soviet Union. I didn't know much about Russia at the time, but I knew that not many people got a chance to go. So I said, yes, I would go. And they sent out an official brochure that told you everything that you would need to know, how the money works, and helpful phrases in Russian. And one of the areas was how to pack, what to pack. It said that Moscow and New York City were on the same parallel on the map. So the winter in Moscow would be similar to winter in New York City. Now at that time, I believed that official brochures had to be truthful. Okay. They said you should take a trench coat, this as you would in New York City. The day I was supposed to leave, my best friend, who was living in New York City at the time, came to LaGuardia Airport to see me off. We were talking for a while, and he kept looking at my trench coat. And he said, where's your other coat? And I said, what other coat? This is my coat. He said, where's your heavier coat? The official brochure said that Moscow and New York City were on the same parallel. So I should wear a trench coat as I would in New York City during the winter. He reminded me that in World War II, the German army had gotten so close to Moscow that they could see the walls of the Kremlin when they were stopped by the Russian winter. But the brochure said that a trench coat would suffice. He said, let me loan you my coat. I said, I don't know, Maurice. This, People wouldn't lie about this. It's an official brochure. He says it was the Russian army, it was the German army, Chuck. They had swept across Europe. They got to Russia. They were within visual distance of the Kremlin, and the weather stopped them. So at that point, I became convinced that maybe he was onto something. So I borrowed his coat. It was a long, heavy, great coat that he had found in a secondhand shop in London. A 2-hour wait outside of Stalin's tomb in late December in Moscow is no joke. But I had this heavy great coat. And I was warm, and I was laughing, and I was having a good time. I stamped my fee a lot because the brochure also said that you could wear the shoes you would wear in New York City in the winter. So my feet were ice cold, but I felt warm. Okay. Took a troika ride in a birch forest outside Moscow. And I was warm because I had this great coat on. I even got down in the snow and made an angel because I had the great coat. I would never do that in a trench coat. We took a midnight train from Moscow to Leningrad, and it was freezing on the train. Took my coat off and covered up with it, and slept like a baby. Now that I'm 67, and I'm much more cynical than I was then, I would never, ever, ever believe an official brochure. I tell myself frequently that I hope to one day meet the person who wrote that brochure. Thank you.
I never should have loaned my Barbie van to my brother, who rolled it off our apartment balcony with his G.I. Joes inside. So I never should have loaned my roommate my very favorite record. She put it on the record player and opened the curtains to the harsh California sun. By the last song, it was on its way to an L.A. landfill. She didn't ask for forgiveness, and I didn't offer any. We have just one more storyteller scheduled. If anybody else would like to jump on board, feel free to do that. We actually had till 3:30 assigned for our event here today, but so be it. Get with Katie Wittenauer over here from ARCA. If you've got a story that you can tell, first person, 5 minutes or less if possible, on the theme of loan and borrow. That said, we want to welcome Tara Marie to the microphone. Hi, Tara.
It's Tara. It's okay. When I was a kid, I was away for the summer, and my sister called me up and asked me to borrow a bracelet of mine. This particular bracelet was a birthday gift that I had received 1 year, and it was the most beautiful bracelet in the world. I remember it had these blue flower gemstones on it. It was absolutely gorgeous. And she begged and begged and begged and said she'd take the best care of it and nothing wrong would ever happen to it. And so finally, after me telling her that, all right, you better not lose it, you better not let anyone else touch it, and you better not break it. So about a week later, I get a phone call from my sister, and she's in tears because she dropped my bracelet in the ocean. Needless to say, I was not very happy with her, and I made her feel so, so, so bad for losing my bracelet and dropping it in the ocean. And I told her I'd never let her borrow anything ever again, and for a while I didn't let her borrow anything ever again. But funny thing is, I didn't really like that bracelet all that much. I never wore it. I was never a bracelet fan, and I still kind of feel bad about it to this day. Thank you.
We do have cookies and water and coffee, I believe, over here, if you'd like to grab a treat. Do we have any other storytellers? You've sized up the talent now. And well, if not, I just want to point out, Rodney's going to play us out here of our event. We do want to thank the East Lansing. Yo. Oh, okay. Okay. Woman's name would be Martha Bayshore.
I didn't know that there'd be such fabulous storytellers here. But I thought this is a good story because it's about borrowing and loaning. About 15 years ago, the house next door to us went on the market. And my brother and his wife were looking for a new house. And so I said to my husband, I've got a great idea. Let's tell them about the house next door. Maybe they'd like to buy it. Oh, a great idea. And then we stopped and thought, well, what if they don't want to live next door to us? And then we asked them, and then they have to say, oh, no, don't think so. Didn't, you know, that'd be awkward. So we make the offer. I say to my brother and his wife, the house is coming on the market. Do you guys think you'd be interested? Well, now they're thinking, oh, what if they're just being nice and saying that and they don't really want us to live next door to them, and now what do? We say yes, but they really didn't mean it. Well, anyway, we got that all sorted out. They bought the house. And that began 15 years of borrowing and loaning. We put a pathway between our two houses. We even put lights in it so that at night people could get back and forth between the two yards. They had three kids, we had two. And if I had a list of all the items that went back and forth between our two houses, there wouldn't be time to tell it today. But at the end of every year, we would have an amnesty program. No questions asked. If you find something in your house that you're pretty sure belongs to the neighbors, just secretly take it back. Sometimes there would be notes left. Marmar, borrowed two eggs. Thanks, Danny. Marmar, borrowed your black suitcase. Is that okay? Thanks, Aller. And then we would do the same thing. Nobody was home next door. Can I go next door and see if they have any Cheerios? Yup. If you couldn't find your rake, or you couldn't find your hair dryer, you couldn't find your strapless bra, couldn't find that can of tomato sauce that you bought just yesterday, you could be pretty sure that the neighbors had it. But it's made for a lot of entertainment, and it's made for a great spirit of community property. Nothing really belongs to us, and nothing really belongs to him. Everything belongs to everybody.
Oh, well done. Well, we want to thank all of our stories. How about one collective, since everything belongs to everybody, one collective round of applause for all of our intrepid storytellers. Once again, Rod Page is going to play us out here in a little bit, but we do want to thank one more time the East Lansing Public Library for hosting us this afternoon. We also want to acknowledge Grand Traverse Pie Company and Curious Bookshop for donating some of the prizes for our store. That's what everyone has been getting from Katie Wittenauer here after they wrap up. Thanks also to Katie and to Dean Steve Esquith of ARCA, the Residential College in the Arts and Humanities, for helping us pull this all together. One final reminder that we have one more Pop-Up Stories event coming your way this fall, Wednesday, October 21st, week from Wednesday, 5:30 p.m. at Reach Studio Art Center in Rio Town. Create and Destroy is our theme for the night. So if you've got a story to tell along those lines, we would love to hear from you. Stop by or email us, currentstate@wkar.org. You can keep in touch once again by liking us on Facebook or sharing your own tiny tales on Twitter using the hashtag pop-up stories. Glad you all came here today. We still got a lot of nice weather, nice afternoon to go out and enjoy here as opposed to spending it inside the library. Rodney Page is going to play us out. Thanks again, Current State on WKAR. Appreciate it. Thank you.